Awesome. Cool. Whoa. Hello. Hello, guys. My name is Matt Barber. I'm a principal architect on the what is the business applications, the consumer applications platform team, the XRM framework, the CDS platform, the Power Apps thing that you guys have been hearing about all week. I am one of three architects who work on that team. My responsibilities on the team primarily deal with the developer experiences, the infrastructure experiences, stuff you see and interact with. My peers tend to work on the infrastructure, so if it doesn't perform well, it's their problem. it's kind of how things are evolving, but that's okay. So thanks for coming to my session. It is the end of Build. And I imagine that most of you have been sitting in sessions that have been bombarded with PowerPoint for the most part. Show of hands, PowerPoint to death. Yeah. So I have 12 slides, that's it. And that includes the slide you're looking at, the heading, the tail, and the QA slide. So there's really only five or six slides of content. We're going to be spending a whole lot of time in the product, in Visual Studio, in Postman, and a bunch of other things. So if you're afraid of that, there's the door. If you're not afraid of it, awesome. We'll crank through this. So by show of hands, who here is coming from the CRM world? Okay. All right, who's coming from the non-CRM world? So not business applications, but non-CRM. Couple of folks, okay? What I'm gonna try to do with this presentation and this walkthrough is present to you the non-CRM centric way of looking at this. I will be in the client, but briefly. Everything I'm going to really drive through is focused around API and extensibility and the use of this outside of the traditional business application space. Okay. Now, with that said, who by show of hands is confused about this thing called Power Apps? What is it? What's it do? Okay, couple of folks, raise your hands. So as we've been doing a couple of times, I'm going to go back through and recap it. From the overall platform architecture, I'm going to touch on it, and we'll work through that. Okay. So first and foremost, what we're going to cover, as I said, is really just kind of an overview of the overall components. We're going to talk a bit about how it fits together. And that's something that we use the term Power Apps as a very overloaded term as of now, as of 4 weeks ago. We're using it as a very overloaded term. Power Apps traditionally meant that drag and drop design service, Project Sienna, that evolution. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that anymore. It's part of it, but it doesn't mean just that. I want to touch on all the tools and capabilities you have. What is actually, what this thing actually gives you? What does it bring to you? What can you do with it? And realistically start working through some use case examples of doing something semi-real with the application and work through. Now, I'm going to caution you guys straight away, and I'll caution you again. When I actually step into the app and start working with APIs, I'm working with live data from the world. So it's not pre-filtered. It's not pre-cleaned. So you might see something that could be offensive. It's not my fault. I try to avoid it. But I'm working with real APIs, okay? Because I find that it works much better when I can show you operational working code that you can go home or go to your hotel tonight if you're resident, actually play with it, and then catch us and talk to us. So let's first talk about the business application platform. So the business application platform is now organized into two main functional areas. The Power Apps area, Power Apps platform, Power Platform, there's four or five different names for it, and the Power BI space. Now, what do these actually mean at the end of the day? When we think about what Power Apps and Power BI work down to, they work down to two halves of the problem that we have in most applications, most business applications areas. First off, the concept of having a transactional data store, the ability to interact in a relational sense with data, and have business process or flow or workflow or logic apps or some sort of code execution process occurring. And then the other side of the house, which is all about analytics. What happened? Why did it happen? What's the trending analysis? Where's this going to go? These are more competitive concepts than you might imagine. If you optimize, so by show of hands, who works in like a Fortune 5,000 plus enterprise who's got like lots of data? Okay, so if you try to optimize your infrastructure for transactional Power Apps, your analytics side suffers. If you try to optimize for analytics and you're dealing with aggregation, your transactional capabilities suffer. You end up writing just tons and tons of code of trying to figure out how to mesh this together. Building cubes in your production system, your performance problems, all sorts of crazy. How do I know that? Because we tried it. The Dynamic CRM product tried to do that. We put reporting in, we started adding cubes, we started adding all sorts of creative stuff behind the scenes, and it got, performance-wise, it got a little clunky. We still do that, but not so much anymore. We've started relying on Power BI to do a lot of that. But from a platform point of view, from a business applications platform point of view, we are separating those concerns. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean that they're totally isolated. You'll notice that on either side, we have the term common data service, either for analytics or for applications. The common data service is the runtime engine of that infrastructure, each side. Now, they talk together through the concept of a common data model and connectors. A common data model defines the common objects that you're going to interact with. Now, let me pause there. The common data model slash objects from the legacy Power Apps world encompassed a group of 150 to 200 entities-ish. Okay, most of them were drawn either from the CRM side of the house or the ERP side of the house and blended together. The common data service and the common data model as shipped at this very moment has realistically 10 operational entities, account contact. So we've retracted back to the core because we were seeing people build apps that didn't necessarily have anything to do with the objects we were providing. Now, at the same time, we want to be able to provide those components. We want to be able to provide a sales application infrastructure if you want to use it. We want to be able to provide a service management or an order processing infrastructure if you want to manage it. So we've taken the common data model and now compartmentalized it. There is the core platform that it ships with a very restricted set of entities, and then the ability to extend and augment and add packs on top of it, okay? Data connectors are how we're integrating these services together. Things that are described in the common data model are integrated for you, or will be integrated for you. Right now, not so much, but it's coming as we're putting this together. Now, all of this, of course, is built out, serving as the underpinnings for Dynamics 365. Several different Office products are now starting to rely on us. You've seen the demos of SharePoint. Who's been through a SharePoint demo where they click the Go Create a Form button and it popped open what they call the Power App? Okay. Who's been into the Power Apps demos where they've gone off and built something that's sitting on top of CRM data? There's been a couple of those. Okay. You've seen connector demos where you have connectors integrating that data back and forth. Connectors are part of the data connection infrastructure. They're relied upon by the integration services. They're relied upon by the surfaces, the UI surfaces. They're relied upon by other elements of our platform. The Canvas app concept, which used to be known when people would say Power Apps, what we now call that is a Canvas app. That's the mental thing. What is it? It is a pixel perfect. You build it. It's a WYSIWYG development. It doesn't refactor. It doesn't reform. You want that pixel to be in the upper left-hand corner in purple. It's going to be in the upper left-hand corner in purple forever. Okay? It is an app authoring environment. That environment, Canvas app specifically, is being added to many different Microsoft properties to serve as a means to do form design and form development. Okay. Under the covers, of course, it's connecting to its data sources through the connector architecture. So all of those connectors and whatnot that we've talked about, it natively can connect to the CDS infrastructure, which brings through the whole API infrastructure that we're about to talk about. Now, when we further think about how this is put together, this sits on top of our Azure infrastructure. It didn't used to. Parts of it did, parts of it didn't. It now sits entirely on our Azure infrastructure. So again, by show of hands for folks that are in CRM, who is on CRM Online or Dynamics 365 Online for customer engagement, field service, project service, marketing, sales, by show of hands? Okay. Big names. Our marketing team loves big names. If you are using our version 9 version of the product, you are on this infrastructure. We have put you on that infrastructure. And we've done it in a transparent fashion. How did we do it? It's built on, this infrastructure is built on the same underpinnings of the Dynamics business with the addition of the Power Apps business, the connectors, Flow, and many other Azure artifacts that are now part of the business applications team. Why did we bring them together that way? Because we've had these assets being independently developed for a number of years and are now we've now kind of gotten together and said, this is our business applications platform. We can bring this all together, make it simple to build, to integrate with, and develop upon. Okay? Now, that decision was executed in November of last year. In January, we opened the private preview of the Common Data Service for Apps by, late January. March, we were opening it up for general consumption, and it's GA now. You have it now. Okay? We're very, very rapidly bringing this together, but we're doing it in a weekly release cadence. So when you go home and play with it tonight, it's not all one big unit just yet. It's not all one unified experience yet. It will get there. And it will get there relatively quickly. Okay? So let's move on. From a vision point of view, whenever you do something like this, you have to start thinking about what it is you're trying to solve. What's the problem you're trying to solve? And realistically, the problem we're trying to solve here is to provide the application platform for customers who are novices, all the way through your enterprise dev with your enterprise requirements, your high security requirements, your complex governed processes, okay? And we're trying to do that while leveraging the assets and capabilities of the Azure platform as part of this without having to throw it in your face, okay? And that's kind of one of the key points that we're trying to do here. We're not saying you've got to go buy an Azure subscription, you've got to buy part A, part B, part C, part D, integrate them together, figure out how to deploy them all as one, and package and deploy that. We're trying to bring that together into one experience. You're building a business application. It happens to use functions. It happens to use logic apps. It happens to use Flow. And we deploy it as a unit. Okay? You manage it as a unit. That's the direction that this platform is going. Now, one of the slides that we use relatively quickly is talking about the various components of the way we deal with applications. So the concept of a packaged application. Dynamics 365 customer engagement for sales is a packaged application. Talent onboarding is an application. Project services is an application. Who here has used either project service or field service? Anyone? Okay, so what is project service field? So project service is a project management application really targeted to the service industry, if you think about that. Field service is your cable company. They need to do a service order dispatch, send a tech out. They have scheduling, they have requirements. Neither of those applications actually has components that are shipped on our server. They're entirely delivered as application packages that are deployed on demand onto the server infrastructure. Okay, that is the way it is right now, today. You guys can do that too for your customers and your applications to that level of complexity where you're operating a SaaS business on top of our platform. Okay? So let's move in to actually talk about the guts of this thing. Now, when we talk about what you have access to, you can distill all of this away down into this concept. When you're talking about CDS, and CDS specifically here. CDS exposes a web API. The web API is the gateway to everything else. By show of hands, who saw Ryan's presentation this morning? The overview, bunch of you, excellent. Ryan's team is primarily responsible for everything that's in the purple there in the middle, okay? It's a lot of work. It's kind of crazy as far as the feature set and capabilities that go into that. But at the end of the day, the entire system boils down to an architecture that looks like this. What we provide is a web API that allows you to implement code run in a serverless fashion within the concept of a transaction or outside of a transaction. It allows you to model your own API and execute that in a transaction or outside of a transaction. This is exposed to all of our design surfaces. And today we have four design surfaces. We have Canvas apps, which you've seen a lot of. We have model apps, which those of you from the XRM world think of. We have Unified Service Desk. We have mobile. Okay, and you can invent your own if you'd like, because we make that API fully available and publicly documented. It has been that way for quite a while. But we use our own API to run our own infrastructure. The design surfaces, the development surfaces are all run through this API infrastructure, which means you have the ability to access and create what we call plugins, others call functions, right in the execution pipeline for any given object. You're not restricted to the concept of a thing called an account or the thing called a contact. If you want to invent your own object, your own storage object, you can do that. If you want to invent your own standalone storage object, you can do that. We manage the data tier. You don't know how we do it. We manage the data tier, but we provide you backup. We provide you restore. We provide you restore points. We provide you the ability to move data, move between tenants. Our service is tenant-based, which means that your tenant has an instance of this, but it can also have many instances of this, classified at different tiers. So the concept of a sandbox, a production instance, a trial set of trial instances, there'll be other instance types in the near future that support, that have different behavior patterns within the environment. In the case of Microsoft, we use this extensively. We have over 700 instances in our tenant. Now, why do we have different instances? Because we have isolation between businesses. We have isolation between divisions and groups that are managed not only just by URI or application, but also physical isolation, which then we allow for shared services to interact between them. This allows you to provide to your customer or your own development area, the ability to provide the necessary level of security and control as required by your business. We're globally available, and we also exist in several different restricted environments, US government environment, Germany, a few other places. Okay, the root capabilities around this feature set are more targeted at that upper end, that enterprise governance concept, whereas the novice part of the facilities are more geared towards the concept that we'd had something like this called a default instance or an available instance that's available to all Office customers. So when you go through and customize a SharePoint page, let's say you have SharePoint, you don't know anything about Power Apps at all, there's a button at the top of the screen that says customize. You click the customize link. In the background, what's happening is we are creating an instance, an environment for you, stamping out one of these, and we're putting in the hosting component for Canvas, which means this is immediately available to you to take advantage of. So let's start talking about what we can do with that. So this is where we start shifting over into more and more demos. I am happy to take QA through a lot of this, but I'm going to kind of crank through some of this. If you can't see it there in the back, shout out, and I'll zoom in to show you specific areas. So we're going to touch on a couple of different things. Entities, business rules, metadata API, and the web API. So let's step into that. All right. And we're going to duplicate. All right. Really, go away. All right. So the first thing we're going to deal with is, or we're going to talk about, is the entity constructs. So what I'm looking at here, actually, we'll start with creating an environment. So what I'm looking at here is the admin.powerapps.com site. These are several of the instances that I have available in my world. In this case, I have a tenant that has both Dynamics 365, various applications, and core CDS instances, as well as down-level versions of the platform. So I have 8.2, 8.1, 8.0, and so on and so forth. The older versions don't show. We only start reporting or reflecting for version 9 going forward. So if you have a version 9 Dynamics CRM instance, you go to admin.powerapps.com, you can do that now, and you will see your instances reflect through here. This experience is one of the admin experiences. We actually have three right now. We are moving to one, and we will move to one over time. If you're interested in seeing what that one looks like, the URL is admin.dynamics.com, and that is the place to start, and that will build out over time. We're not singing it to the praises right now because all you can do right now is open a service request and jump into the Dynamics Admin Center. But soon. So in this case, I have an instance that I've created, and I can see the environment type, who created it, I can manage security, I can jump into the Dynamics Administration Center, I can move in and manage security for that instance, should I choose to do so. If I wanted to create a new instance, I can come over here to Environment, I can call this one foo test, and I'm gonna use a trial, I'm gonna create that environment. Oh, don't have capacity for that. Let's create a production one. So I'm gonna create an environment, and at this point, I've created the container. So I have the ability at this very moment to host the Dynamics, Canvas apps, flows, connectors, gateways, all of that fun stuff. I'm gonna now create the database. Now, creating the database is the thing that actually stamps CDS into your instance. So if I go down here to currency, I'm gonna choose that. I'm gonna choose English. I'm gonna create my database. I click the button, and it will begin the process of creating the instance in the background. Now, I created it through this vehicle, through admin.powerapps.com, which means I got the base CDS deployment. I just have the few entities that I was talking about, okay? Now, if I were to step into, let's just go into this one real quick. Let's go into this one real quick, just so I don't have to type the link in, and click the Go to the Dynamics Admin Center, I will see foo test being provisioned. So your instances, customers who create instances in your tenants, will see them appear here. Okay, so your Dynamics admin is gonna see this. We've added some nice filtering features that allow you to cut and slice down this a little bit so you don't have to see them all, but they will see them appear. Now, the other way I can create an instance is through PowerShell. So in this case, who by show of hands is familiar with the admin API, administration API? So we have an administration API. For those of you that didn't raise your hands, the administration API is the API way that you do the task that I just did through the UI. So let's say that you're trying to do a build process, and as part of your build process, you need to go create an instance, stand the instance up, deploy your code to it, run your test battery, throw your instance away. Okay, pretty practical sequence of events. So what we do is we have created a, I've got a little PowerShell script here that kind of runs through some of these. But in this case, I'm gonna start with the service version here, run that piece of code. And that's gonna go out, it's gonna connect into our admin system. In this case, I'm logged into North American, my tenant, and I can see that my tenant has three versions of the product available. Now, of course, 9.0 is the only one that's actually applicable to CDS, so we're gonna focus in on that. Now, I have a command here where I'm gonna tell it to go create a new instance. In this case, I'm telling it to create a new instance as base language English, with a domain name of build test. That's the admin user I'm setting it up with. I'm choosing the 9.0 service version, and I'm creating it as a sandbox with US dollar as its primary instance. Now, you notice I use the command validate only. Validate only allows me to run a test to determine whether or not I'm gonna be successful when I create this instance. So now I'm gonna go execute that. Running that same command, this time without the validate only, causes the system to create the instance. Now, if there is a template available for the instance, a placeholder available for the instance, it should turn around relatively quickly. Give it 15 seconds, 20 seconds, it should come back with an instance created. I'm gonna wait through that process while that's going on. This method is the way in which if you're building a script, or you're building a deployment script, or you're building any sort of CI or ALM aspects, this is how you manage your instances. You've now spun up an instance, in this case it's finished, the instance is available and ready to use, and in fact, if I come back over to my environment here, and it hasn't refreshed yet, but if I refresh it by hand, I should actually see build test show up right inside that environment, okay? So that's created build test inside the environment, it's ready, and it's ready to be used, okay? I can choose to delete it at this point, run my test battery, and get rid of it. Okay, cycle in, cycle out very, very quickly. Now, I'm gonna shift gears and come over to the web.powerapps.com experience. The web.powerapps.com experience is our authoring and development environment. Those of you from the CRM world know the Solution Explorer, you know the form editor. You know that we haven't touched those things since 2011 for the most part, okay? That is all changing. All of that is now coalescing, being redesigned and rebuilt in light of a lot of what was done from a pioneering point of view in the Power App space into this experience, which is the web.powerapps.com portal, or the Maker portal is the other way this is referred to. Now, within the Maker portal, there are two modes. There's a canvas mode and a model mode. I'm in model mode right now. Quick way to know if you're in canvas mode, if you go into canvas mode, panels are all dark. In model mode, they're all light. Okay? Nice visual cue so you know which piece you're working with. Now, in this case, in my environment, which is CVG-12, is the environment I'm gonna work with, I have a set of entities that I'm gonna work with. Now, I've already created a couple of entities in here. I'm just gonna narrow it down to custom. In this case, a thing called outfit and member. I'll explain what they are here in a couple of minutes. But in this scenario, what we're gonna do is we're gonna create a new entity. Now, before I create the new entity, I'm gonna come over to Postman. I'm going to get my instance connection, and I am gonna ask the system for metadata on a particular object. So in this case, MatB outfit, and through the web API, I have retrieved all the metadata for this particular entity. So in this case, this is returning the entity definition that allows the system to reflect that. Now, this is used in this UI. When I went in here and actually did this, what I'm actually seeing is the output from the query that I just ran. Okay? So you're building an Azure application. You're on a web app. You're building out your web application, you need to stamp out an entity. You need to build the entity on the fly. All of that is available to do through the API, okay? And in this case, I'm gonna now create a new entity, just to give you kind of a construct of how this happens. And in a lot of technology stacks, when you create a new object, you have to go recompile the server, you have to recompile a bunch of other things to get it to work. So in this case, I'm gonna create something called foo test. MatB foo test, we're gonna click next. I'm gonna create a new field, foo test one. I'm gonna make this text, done that. We're gonna create another new field, we're gonna call this foo test two. Oh, not foot, foo test two. And we're gonna create this as a whole number, and we're gonna done those two. Then I'm gonna save the entity. Now, one of the optimizations, those of you that been with us for CRM, one of the optimizations we've done here, as you can see, is we now allow you to queue up all your changes to an entity and click save. Much faster, the entity's been created, the object's built out. If I now go and look at foo test and click the advance button, which is gonna take me to the old Solution Explorer experience, and I go look at foo test here, foo test exists just like it did in the CRM world with all of its features and options. So you wanna make this word mail merge enabled, all of those features still exist. They're just not exposed in the new portal yet. But it's also gone and built out all the forms that it needs. It's built out all the views that it needs to serve the main application, all the fields it needs are built out. Security is built out. Security ACLs have been created. All of that has been done for you in that save operation. So whether or not you choose to use it through the UI or not is not material. It's all there now for you to take advantage of from a security management point of view. Now, coming back over to my Postman collection, if I come here and I go to this, test, if I spelled that correctly, send. System is going to go ask that question, and now I have live metadata for the object that I just created. No recompile, no republish, no setup. The entity is there. Everything is there and ready for you to use. Okay? So you're going to think about this from the point of view of traditional website development. You need to go get MongoDB. You got to go get MySQL. You got to go get DocDB. You've got to define your schema. You've got to establish your schema. You've got to run your build scripts. There. This is there for you. You have a web API available to you immediately, applying security, audit. We even have auditing, by the way. Auditing, activity logging, access logging, read auditing. All of that is now available just because you created the entity under this infrastructure. And it's there and ready for you to use. Okay, so we've created an entity, and we've created it within our infrastructure. Now, next thing we want to deal with is a business rule. Now, one of the things that we give you the ability to do within our world is manipulate business rules. What is a business rule? Business rules take various forms, and in our world, let me move this to custom, and they can be manifested a couple of different ways. So if I drill into, in this case, the outfit view, business rules can exist as an artifact of the entity. They can also be part of an overarching business process. So who here has attended a session owned by Flow? Everybody's seen Flow, right? Flow actually owns the business rules system going forward, as well as the overarching concept. You'll see some of those constructs appear. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into this, and I'm going to create a new business rule. Now, today, we haven't built a totally new designer for the business rule system, so you're seeing the one from the old XRM system. But in this case, what I want to do in my condition is I want to create a condition that's going to let me, hello, properties, there you go. So in this case, I want to say that if the outfit tag has data, contains data. Okay, so if it contains data, I want to set a field value. And in this case, I want to set the primary name field value. Okay. Oh, yeah, and I need to choose the value. That's fine, we'll just leave it blank. Okay. So when I've created a business rule to do this, I can validate it, I can change my scope to be entity, all forms, information. Business rules can be applied at functionally two tiers of our system, either at the entity layer, or they can be applied at the UI layer, and the UI layer only. Okay, what does that mean? It means that if I apply it at the entity layer, it's available to the SDK. If I were to call now create entity, that be outfit, pass in the outfit tag, this business rule will fire. Okay? If I scoped it to a form, all forms or the information form, then this business rule would only fire if somebody were using one of the UIs of the CDS platform. Okay, so you have that control to make those decisions back and forth between them. So I'm going to skip this here and close that out. That's a business rule. Done that. We've talked a little bit about the metadata API and the fact that I've shown you the metadata API a couple of times. The metadata API that we have allows you to query for not only entity definition, but it also allows you to ask for message definition. So all entities automatically get your primary CRUD, create, update, delete operations. Many additionally get the concept of associate, disassociate, What does that mean? It means create a reference or referral to. They get additional messages put in on top of them. You can create your own messages that affect them. And the metadata API can be used to interrogate the infrastructure at runtime and result that data back to you. So let's say you create a custom message to go create something in the infrastructure that can be understood and referred to inside this experience. So let's take a look at what that looks like. Make sure I'm touching on all the right points there, just a moment. There we go. Actually, let's hold that because I actually want to, I'm going to get on a tangent if I go into that, and I'm going to save that for the next section. Now, within the metadata API, as you can see from the URI up here, we're dealing with an instance root. In this case, I'm addressing a particular instance, API and data, and then the version of that instance. This is our web API. This is the primary API that we advocate for external applications integrating with our system. Okay? The API is versioned. 9.0 is the shipping version. It follows the release platform version. We change the API based on version numbers. So we support backward compatibility. If you were to address the 8.x, 8.1, 8.2, 8.0 API, you will get a reduced message set compliant with that. If we changed how we result, that would change based on the version. So again, we're providing standard versioning constructs here. This is a very, this, I mean, you see this in Azure, you see this everywhere. This is the standard versioning construct for how to integrate with our system. Through our web API, we can do lots of interesting stuff. We can query various entities, various types. I can read data, I can write data. I can do all sorts of things through the web API. We support get, post, patch, delete, all through the web API. We also support batch operations through our web API. So again, from a development point of view, you can build your own site that talks directly down to our web API, that interacts with it. So let's build on a little bit. Whenever we're working with the web API or working with the business rule system, we invariably trigger what we refer to as our plugin system. The plugin system is the ability for you to write code in a serverless fashion. You don't have to stand a server up. You don't have to deal with it. Very much like a function. You don't have to stand any of that up. Now, is it functions? Right now, no. It's a legacy infrastructure. In the future, yes. But would we expose the functions aspect to you? Maybe some element of it. But we're not going to look at you and say, go stand up an Azure website. Here's the whole stack of functions you need to build, and then plug it in. We're going to provide you the ability for you to register the component that you need through the system and then run it for you as part of the operation. Okay? We are not going to preclude you from doing that, though. If you really want to go build all that stuff out for whatever reason, you can do that. What are the reasons? The reasons typically deal with performance and runs. You have limits that we place on the system as far as how much, how big, how long, so on and so forth. Okay? And we're doing that from a democratization of resources construct. If you need to do something specialized that's high intensity, takes a long time, lots of CPU, you probably want to run that on your own system or you're going to get throttled. It'll be slower on us, okay? But we're not going to prevent you from doing that. Now, our plugin pipeline has a series of events. This is how our extensibility system fundamentally works. We have both our OData, our web API, and our SOAP API that feed through what we refer to as an API service. Interesting little tidbit. Our service, our API, our SOAP API, and our web API, and our OData 2 API all talk to the same API interface layer. Under the covers, everything is an interface that we call iORG request. Okay? Why do we do it this way? It allows us to support new technologies and new standards without fundamentally having to recode our infrastructure to support it, and allows us to nominalize this and support upgrade. So as it stands today, a customer can successfully upgrade from our 2011 product, to our 2018 product, to our 9.0 product. They can go straight through for an upgrade, and it will work assuming they stayed within the supported boundaries of our API. Okay? Yeah. Nod your head. Yeah. Who does that? In the case of this system, though, we prevent you from going off the rails. In the case of our clients, yes, you can go off the rails because we support JavaScript in our clients. But plugins, straight through. It's going to work on the other end. Okay? Now, how does our plugins work? Those marks that are in blue are the places that you, the developer, can hook your logic into. So a pre-validation handler, you can affect that. A pre-operation handler, you're in the transaction now, you can affect that, which means if you ring out from the pre-operation handler and go make a bunch of other changes in the pipeline and fault, you can roll the whole thing back. Okay? You have the same capability in the post-operation handler. You've done your primary commit, you're in the transaction, you're gonna go do other work, decide that there's a problem, you roll the whole thing back. Okay? And then we have the what we refer to as the async handlers. Async handlers are situations where we execute your code at some point after the post-operation. Okay? Notice I use the term some point after, which means your code runs or your operation runs, you get put in the queue, and then the queue is picks you up, okay, on the next processing cycle. If you get into high load scenarios, this is where you see things slow down a bit. Now, on the other hand, the async operation lets you do these things passively in the background. Everything above the async handlers is actually done in the UI flow, in the API flow. So if you've built a front-end website, you've written a plugin on the pre-operation handler, your code is going to run as part of the update, which means if you've got a user sitting at the other end of that page, they're waiting. Okay? Very, very important you understand that. That is a performance penalty. You need to think about that code from an optimization point of view. Same with anything post-operation. Honestly, the way that I tend to guide partners and ISVs is that if there isn't a good reason to put it in the pre-operation or post-operation or validators, put it in an async job. Okay? Get it out of the pipe. There's a lot of good reason to put it there, and it's primarily validation. If you're doing validation, then that's a great place to be. Okay? Sometimes you got to do validation post-operation and fault it based on the triggering downstream. Now, plugins trigger plugins. What does it mean? Let's say you come through, you do your pre-operation, you do your database operation, the database operation doesn't update, and in your post-operation, you call another entity that has a plugin. This whole process starts again for that entity in context, and so on and so forth down through your execution chain. Okay? Inside your plugin, you know what level you're at, how deep in the execution pipe you are. We make that available to you. We actually do have thresholds. If you hit the bottom of the pipe in our world, which is, I believe, five levels deep, is it seven now? Yeah, we that's been a dial a couple of times. So you hit the end of the pipe, we abort the transaction. We immediately throw the abort, and you roll back up. And the reason we do that is we think you've gone runaway. Okay, we think you've written a loop. Okay, so let's actually dig into that and play with that. So let's go build some. And this. And duplicate. There we go. All right, so let's go build some plugins. So the example I was starting to give you was the concept of a custom operation, a custom message, and it being able to be called through the API. Okay? So let's start with that. So in this scenario, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a plugin that is the backing for a custom SDK message that I'm going to create. Okay? Now, in this case, I'm using a tool to do this. You can do this. There's several different tools on the market. We have one. We have a pretty rich partner ecosystem around this space. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create what's called an action. An action is a custom API command. Now, I have got my little message set up here, so I want to make sure that I'm calling it correctly. There we go. Build my SDK is the message I decided to use. All right. So when you create a custom action, you can address it against an entity. Remember I said you can create your own custom objects, your own custom commands on top of an entity. If I scroll down here, I'll find foo test in that list. But in this case, I'm creating an unbound SDK message. What does that mean? It means that I'm creating an SDK message that isn't connected to any particular entity. Okay? There's no particular entity that it's directly tied to. So what am I going to do? I can see that I have my build SDK message here. I'm going to jump back over to this experience, and I'm going to refresh this UI. And underneath my process area, I have my build SDK, and I'm going to create some parameters. Now, why isn't that in the dev experience? It's a great question. It'll get there. It's a little clunky the way it works right now, so web UI for the win. So in this case, I'm going to create a property called, create an output, outs01, okay? And it's going to output a text, in this case a text, and it's for the output. I'm going to add that, okay? So I've now defined an output parameter for my custom SDK message. That's all I've done. Save and close that. I'm going to activate that message. It doesn't do anything just yet. Okay. So if I were to now call this here, click send, it's going to say it's not found. Let me refresh my, oh, sorry, didn't publish it. Need to publish it real quick. There we go. Let me publish that message. And once it's published, when it gets there, let me refresh my instance token. Build my SDK is what I called it. Build my SDK. And it should access it and come back with it doesn't do anything. It should just come back empty. Oh, yeah. Did I configure it as an inbound parameter? I thought I pushed the outbound. Hold on just a second. Deactivate it. Highlight that. Thinks that there's an inbound parameter on my message. Yes, there's actually validation there. And I did set that as an output parameter. So why is it complaining? Well, either way, we'll do this for now. Activate that. Yep. Click that. All right, so it's reactivated. I'm going to come back over to this experience. I'm then going to right-click on this. And I'm going to create a plugin for my operation. So when I create a plugin for my operation, what it does is it essentially gives me the ability to hook custom code right into that particular operation. So in this case, I'm going to wire this up on the post operation aspect of it. I'm going to register a new step. And that's going to go create a class for me to work with. There we go. Where I can start coding up my plugin. So in this case, I can start coding right into my execution context and give me the ability to write code in response to my plugin. So if I go in here and go local context dot, I have access to the organization service. I have access to the execution context. If I look at the execution context, I can have input parameters. Had I put input parameters on that message, they're going to appear here, okay? Which allows me now to pick the input parameters off, do processing, and then I can put the output on the output parameters, which are going to appear output parameters appear there. Okay? And again, it's a collection. So you can add in the objects that you want. That can include a whole object. You can pass back an entity with data in it and then process and execute that code. Okay? That then can be addressed through your custom API. In the case of our certification, by show of hands, who knows what AppSource is? Okay, our certification system for AppSource is built on this infrastructure. And our certification system and our provisioning infrastructure talk to this system through this method. We actually didn't build any super secret sauce to make that work. We're using standard S2S authentication for it to communicate and interact with. And I didn't call that out. We actually fully support server-to-server identity and authentication, as well as certificate-based authentication, as well as application key-based authentication for service-to-service accounts. So again, you're building a portal, an app, whatever, you can communicate directly to us. Okay, starting to run short on time, so I'm gonna speed things up here a little bit. Okay, now, one of the things I wanted to highlight as I went through this operation with you guys was building out more complex or interesting business applications that work within this environment. So what I've done, I've set some of this up ahead of time because I never have enough time to actually do this in like a 75-minute session from scratch. But I built this actually this morning. Sitting in Ryan's session is where I built most of this. So what I have done here is I've created a thing called a new instance. It's a CDS instance only. It has got two entities in it, outfit and member. The scenario that I have here is I'm a gamer. I love games. One of the games I play excessively is a game called PlanetSide, which is global conflict. Three factions fighting it out. You have outfits, guilds, okay, for those of you from the fantasy world. And guilds have membership. Members have ranks, members have levels, outfits have factions, a bunch of other things. So as a gee whiz, why not? I plugged in CDS into their API. And I plug that in to demonstrate how to communicate between CDS and an external API. And very much like some of the demos that you guys have seen where we've put as many Microsoft services into something as we can to get something done, I took that approach. But I grind my teeth when I see those demos, so I only did two things, okay? I used three. Logic Apps, Service Bus, Functions, CDS itself. So of course, CDS is the focus. Okay, now I'm gonna go through and show you this from the point of view of the application point of view, but I'm not going to demonstrate this through the app. I'm actually gonna do it through the API as far as invoking and getting it to do things. So what I did is I went through and I created a thing called outfit and member, and then I created an application. There is a relationship between outfit and member here, if I click on relationship, called outfit association. So it allows me to relate a outfit to its membership, okay? I built a UI around that. So if I come under apps, and I look at my outfit apps, and I choose to edit that, I go into the UI editor for model applications. I can actually do this as a Canvas app too. I just chose to do it this way because it accesses some of the really interesting editors. And here, I created a sitemap with just the pieces on it. I created a form for my outfit. So if I click on information, that brings me into my UI design surface. Again, not really important, but we do have a design surface that allows you to model out a UI. There's my outfit tag, my primary name, my faction URI, all of that's there. And in my membership form's even simpler. It has the name, the battle rank, the certificate, class name, and then some hidden data, the census URI and some imagery data, okay? One of the things that we had on the title was custom controls. It's interesting enough to see a number, but a graphical representation of that number is a lot more interesting. So in this particular game, there's a level cap, as with many games. So I know what that level cap is, and I was able to use a control here on Battle Rank, where I can now manifest, in this case, the radial knob control, the minimum, the maximum, the rank, and then the value in. Now, in this case, this control was built, we shipped this control. It's something available, but it uses our control framework for our UIs. Now, something important to understand, our control framework works for our UIs, okay? It doesn't work for ASP.NET. It only works for our model applications today, and in the future, it will work both for model and Canvas apps in the future. It manifests on our mobile clients and a couple of other places. from a capabilities and feature set point of view, you can think of it like ASCX control. In SharePoint, you're building a web control. You can think of it like that, except it uses a set of standard interfaces and standard events to interact and work in and out of this space. Why? Because we want to maintain upgradability. We want you to be able to build a control, drop a control into a form, use it inside your application, and still let us patch the infrastructure. So it is a contracts-based interface as we move forward. That's something that in our UX, I'm going to look at you guys, you got to live with it. Because we support upgradability. It's more important to the customers in our understanding to be able to move smoothly from version 1 to version 2 to version 3 to version 4 and not have to have the developer, the ISV, the partner come in and resell the same solution and the upgrade every time. Make sense? So you'll see that philosophy in our experience. In this case, I've used a thing called a radial knob control. Now, I've also created a view. And in this case, my view has primary name, an outfit tag, modified on, some faction URI data, and there's also some imagery into it. It's a drag and drop experience. If I want to put something else onto it, I could say, let's add the member count. Okay. And as you can see, it's also got data in it. It reads data live. It takes the snapshot of the top row or of the top couple of rows and actually renders them into the UI so you can see how that data is going to look as you're building out your UI. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and save that and save and close that and actually go back into it because I forgot to publish it. That's fine. Save and close. We'll come here and we'll issue the public command from there. Okay, so the next thing we need to do is we need to wire this up with an upstream application that's going to actually do the data retrieval. In the case of the data retrieval, what I chose to do, and I could have used I couldn't have used a Flow because we don't support service bus interface through Flow yet. I could have used Create Record to do it. But in this case, I chose to use a service bus interface. Why? Because service bus is a loosely coupled infrastructure. I can throw something onto the bus. If one end of the system is down or the other, that's fine. It'll get picked up. It's guaranteed delivery in that regard. So in this case, I chose to create a service bus. My service bus has two queues. In this case, one of my queues is an older demo that I have. And I have a new queue called PS Build Example Queue. Now, in my queue, if I drill into it, of course, I've created an access policy for my queue because nobody ever uses the give God rights to the queue and gives it as a connection string to anybody, right? Nobody ever does that. You always create an access policy that limits access to only the things you need. So in this case, I have a connection string that I've created. And what I want to do is anytime I create a new outfit record, I want to send that outfit record to this queue, and I'm going to have something on the other end of this queue pick it up. Okay, so first task, I need to go create a queue. I need to go create something that sends it to this queue. So I have a tool called the plugin registration tool. The plugin registration tool is a legacy CRM component that allows us to manipulate and register service-related components within our system. We have the ability to deal with webhooks, service endpoints, which include both queues, relays, event hubs, and a couple of other things in that capability. So in this case, I'm going to create a new service endpoint. I'm going to take the connection string that I just picked up, paste that in, click Next, and I'm going to leave it going as binary. I actually have the ability to change it to JSON or XAML if I choose to do, JSON or XML if I choose to do so. In this case, I'm going to leave it as binary because the object on the receiving end expects binary. It picked up all the pieces of data that I need. I'm going to click Save. So I've now registered the service endpoint in the system. Now, I'm going to tell it that I only care about create of outfit. Now notice that it's pre-populated all my MatBees. MatBees is the publisher that I'm working under. So I've created things. I have a message It auto-populated the message as I started typing C. Again, we're using the metadata API to talk to the system to pre-populate these fields. They're not coded in. Every entity object can have its own sets of features. So in this case, it's operation. I'm going to set it as post-operation asynchronous because I don't want to be in the execution pipeline. I'm going to register that step. And I've now created something that when I submit a request to the, when I create a new record in the output table, it's going to ship it off to the service bus endpoint that I've identified here. And that's live and ready to go right now. Now, I've built a logic app on the other end that is catching that. Okay? Now, what this logic app is doing is it catches the request, and then it starts authoring a URI, takes advantage of some of the new features to initialize some variables, and it parses that URI, the response from that URI, which is a JSON object, into a membership list. From the membership list, it then works through the outlet, picks up a bunch of data about the outfit, then iterates through its membership, and starts updating data back into the infrastructure, okay, on the fly. So let's actually see it work. So we're going to come back over here. We're going to go into our app, or we're going to invoke our app, because we can just refresh the app view and see the changes in the app. So I had one there already. Now I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to go here, and I'm going to create an outfit, and I'm going to use OO. And send that. Now in this case, I just issued a post request to create a new record. In this case, I'm calling Matt B. I'm using Matt B outfits. I'm using post. Post is create. And I'm passing in the one thing that I need. Okay? That starts the whole thing in motion. I can actually turn right back around and retrieve that. So in this case, I'm just going to send get outfits. And I can see here that, let's see, there is the outfit that I just entered. The primary name is still null. It hasn't been picked up yet. Refresh it again. Let's just grab this ID so we can look at this ID directly. That's that ID right there. Copy that, and we're going to do this. Okay, popped it again. So as you can see here, I'm now pulling data back on that particular ID directly. I'm not having to go search around or run around to get, I'm not having to, come on, work with me here. Hate it when Postman does this. There we go. And run that again. And it should have picked that data up by now. So let's go back over and look at the application. Refresh the view. There it is in the view. Hasn't picked it up yet. Did I deactivate that workflow? Do. I'm over here. And let's go down in here and look at that. Ah, it's running right now. It just picked it up. So let's go back here real quick, do a refresh here. There it is. Recursion's been picked up. Let's come back over here, run that. We can see there's our data right there. It's been picked up. Membership count's been picked up, loaded in. It's all real time running in the UI. If I come back over here and then drill into this, I should actually start seeing data show up here. Okay. Again, live data. Sorry if anybody gets offended. This is literally, I'm streaming this off a game server. Okay. So it's loading up that data right now, and it's doing it asynchronously. So if I come back over here now and I do, let's see, let's delete that and do it again. So I'm going to delete it, which is a cascading delete. I configured the relationship to be a cascading delete. I didn't have to go write the subdelete code. Okay? So I'll prove it to you. I'm going to click in here. I'm going to delete this. I'm going to come over here. This is the members, no members. Cascading delete. I configured that. I did not code that. Okay? And if anybody's interested, I'll show you right where that's configured. So once again, I'm going to rerun that test. We're going to go create that outfit again. There we go. Same request again. This time, actually, let's do this. Let's create a different one. And In this case, let's change to add a preferred return representation header. Because right now, it wasn't giving me anything back. I'd have to re-query for the data that it created, right? Well, let's not do that. So we're going to create another one. In this case, by adding the header for return representation, I get the record back. So just what it created, it hands it back to me. You can see the time. It took 92 milliseconds to create a record. Okay, very, 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 very fast in this regard. Now, both of these are being processed. So in this case, I have to get rid of this because, of course, the ID is now different. And let's take a look. So it's already populated recursion back in. And it has not got, no, it got the second one already too. Okay, so that's all there. If I come back over here and refresh this view, I can see that data is being populated into the system. Okay, I can do this in code too. So in this case, I've been doing it through Postman. Now I'm going to come over here and actually do this using a program. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I have a program that's going to connect to that. I'm going to pull the service client off. I'm going to ask it for, I'm doing a web request. I'm asking over the web API for the outfits. I'm pulling the first one off and asking for the outfit name. I'm going to put that in a UI. Then I'm going to create the Merc outfit. Okay? So I'm going to do that. I'm going to run this as an F5. The CRM service client, by the way, is something that's part of our SDK. We make that fully available to anybody who wants it. I'm just going to go ahead and yes. The UI you're seeing right now is actually a separate component. It's called the login control. It's something that we use for XAML-based applications. You guys are welcome to it. Again, it's in our API, but you don't need it to actually do this. So we're going to step over that. So we've made that web request. Walk through this. We've got our outfit name right there, recursion. Hit F5 or F10. Step over that. That's going to pop a UI up. Yep. And now we're going to go do a create. Boom. Okay. So if I come back over to my UI again, go back to my outfits, I've created it now. Okay. Our API is actually tremendously faster than our client UIs. Okay. Why? Because we're not having to load and render the client UI. The client UI has on its own also a programmability interface, which is not available in the web API. Okay, and those are, but that API is entirely concerned with the UI. In the case of the UCI interface, which I'm showing you here, it is a TypeScript related system. So in this case, I'm going to go and look at this. We're going to jump into this. And here we have our custom control showing us how far along we are to getting to the end of the road from a, in this case, battle rank point of view. Okay. So what I'm showing you here is the ability to integrate with, in this case, a third-party service to integrate, to experience that. Now, what does that actually look like? If I actually pull this out, this is the actual query that's being run. It is a REST request that's being run, in this case, to a service operated by Daybreak. That is returning a bunch of data in JSON format that we're in turn parsing, interacting with, and working with. From a performance point of view, it's pretty quick. You're seeing it react pretty quickly. So now let's make some changes. One of the things I want to do here, is I want to add the leader right on top. I want to add the leader right here. So I don't have to go dig through to figure out who the leader of the group is because I need to go contact the leader. So I want to add them. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to come up here and I'm going to flush out everything here. Delete. And that's gone off. And again, API is fast. All those records are gone. Okay. Now we're going to go through and create the new piece of data that we need. So going into entities, in this case, what I need to do is I need to create a second relationship between outfit and member. Because my current relationship relates all my membership to my outfit. Now I need one guy as the leader. So I'm going to come into relationships. I'm going to create a new relationship. I'm going to add a many to one. And in this case, I'm adding a member to my outfit. We're going to call it member. And we're going to call it leader. And we're gonna done that. Gonna save that. And now we are creating a new relationship between the two. Now in this UI, you didn't see the options to manage the relationship behaviors, cascade, so on and so forth. I'll show you where those are. If I come back over now to my solutions view, refresh my solutions view, go into my entities, and in this case, expand outfit, go into relationships, end to one. I will find my relationship right here. If I expand that relationship, these are all of the actual options that you have with that relationship. So down at the bottom, it's currently set up as referential, but it could be set up as configurable, cascading, delete, or configurable, and you can choose the various behaviors that are available to your relationship. So again, available to you straight through the API. You set this up, your data model's done, off you go, okay? So we've done that. Now we're gonna go put that guy, put that piece on the UI, go back to our app, go into our outfit, go into edits. We're gonna go down to our form, gonna open up our form. We're gonna come in here and we're gonna add our leader column right there. Okay, so I'm putting it on the UI so I can see it. It's the only reason I'm doing that. Publish that. Save and close, save and close. So we've now added it to our UI. Now I need to come over to my actual running application here, Logic Apps Designer, and I need to actually put the leader, tell the system to put the leader in. Okay, because we're using this system to populate it. Now, we get the leader along the way. So in this case, we actually get the leader character ID right here. Now, this is the character ID from the service, not the character ID that we know it as. Okay, so we deal with that down in our navigation, figuring out who our names are, who our people are. And if the contact doesn't exist, we create the record and then we check to make sure that we've got the leader based on the remote system's IDs, okay? If we know that the remote system's ID is accurate, then we come into assign leader, which is where we're now assigning the particular member ID, which is the result of the create, into the leader ID. So we're taking advantage of the variable construct, we're taking advantage of Logic App JSON parsing, we're taking advantage of a number of artifacts of Logic Apps from just a connector's point of view and a controls point of view to build up our post request, okay? So here, assuming that that all pans out correctly and life is grand, what we do is we come in and we go add new step. In this case, we're gonna add an action. Our action is a Dynamics action. D-Y-N. Our action is a Dynamics action. There we go. And we are going to do an update of a record. We are going to update a record. We're going to connect to the particular instance in question, which in this case is that one. We're updating the output table. Come on. There we go. The record identifier, in this case, was passed into us. So we know what that is. That came in our request. So that is our primary entity ID. And what it is we're going to update, showing advanced options, is our leader. And in this case, we're passing in the leader CRM ID. We save that. There we are. Come back into our Postman system now. Go to create an outfit. We're gonna, in this case, use Merc. And we're gonna send it. Okay, now while it's processing that, I wanna take a moment and show you another artifact that we've taken advantage of here. Through this request system, you will see occasionally a call out to a function here. Get faction URI, okay? In this case, what this is doing is it's passing in the context, a particular ID, object ID context, and returning, in this case, a URL. What those functions do, interesting, Let's go back to that there. I refreshed the UI because it logged me out earlier, and apparently it ate my function. There we go. Faction URL. We have a bit of code here that is actually processing the request out, taking the extra bit of code, going off and running that remotely, coming back with the URL. I could do this in a plugin too, should I choose to do so. It just was more efficient in this case to do it here. Okay. The other artifacts that are capable, that you have capability of here, functions have the ability to be triggered on a timer. The XRM API, the XRM SDK, can also be fully addressed from a function using NuGet. You also have access to Key Vault. So has anyone attended the functions sections talking about how Key Vault access works? Okay, so if you haven't, it's worth reading. I don't have enough time to go through it here. I'd intended to, but I just don't have time. You can use Key Vault to store an application ID and a redirect URI and use that as an application ID that lets you connect back to the CDS infrastructure. Okay, your function can trigger and do a direct update back into CDS. What you cannot do is you cannot pass the user token into a function and have it do a callback. You have to call back as an application user or a named user and then impersonate the target user, which you can do using an override header. Now, we've had enough time for that to run. Let's go back to our outfits and refresh this view. So there is that. And there's our leader populated in. Okay. And again, if I now go through and trigger the get on that through the API, get outfits, my leader data is going to be here as well, assuming that Postman is going to cooperate with me, which it isn't right now, so I can't get down to it. Let's do that and do that. And of course, it's not going to let me get down to it. However, trust me, the leader ID is in there, and you have the ability to access the leader's record directly from here. You can do an expand and actually get down to the subset. You're not required, the point I'm trying to get to at the end of the day is that you're not required to use our UI for anything. This is an application platform. It's fronting the access to functions, it's fronting the access to logic apps, to flow, to its own plugin infrastructure, which we're coalescing with functions, its own infrastructure that makes it available for you to build any application that you can describe from a relational point of view onto it. Now, practicality, from a cost perspective and a performance perspective, if you're dealing with tabular flat data, you're dealing with things that don't need operations, you need a database, this is not for you. Okay, you are paying a performance overhead on working with us from an application point of view, because we're putting all of the security, all of the auditing, all of the storage, all of the backup, we're putting all of that goodness that you need for an application into the system. If all you need is a raw place to store tabular data, DocDB, MongoDB, insert your favorite DB here, okay? If you're looking at building a relational system or an application that needs to have things like auditing, security, sometimes a UI, rapid API access, execution in line, without you having to build all of this, come talk to us. CDS Power Apps, that's the place to go to look at that. From a getting used to it, getting playing with it, this is available right now. You guys can use it today. Nothing I've done here is preview. Everything I've done here is in release, okay? The stuff that's in preview is pretty damn cool, and the stuff that's in the wings is just downright awesome. Now, all this stuff I just did, great. Now I want to move it from one environment to another. Left that out there at the end, didn't I? Notice that we're in a solution. A solution construct, a solution is the old XRM, CRM way of thinking about how we organize assets together. This is the model that we are going to be using going forward to move assets from one environment to another. Today, it does not include Canvas apps, connections, or gateways, or flows. It will, and it will in the near future include those. You will have the ability to export, store, deploy, and have it set things up. The deployment infrastructure also has a thing called the package deployment system. The package deployment system gives you the ability to essentially write an installer that goes with it. Multiple packages, multiple systems. Okay, so we're out of time. I'm sorry I took up the question time. There was a lot of content here. I hope it was useful. Thanks for coming out and spending your last day at Build with me. Thank you.